Hello, I'm Rose and I'm an addict.
Rose!
I'm really grateful to be clean, to be in a meeting, to be here in San Fernando. You know, amazing that we're here for 30 years. I wanted to thank Daniel for coming here and leading the meeting. You know, I noticed his accent right away when he came, and I was like, where are you from? You know, he's like from Israel. You know, and that's just amazing to me because Narcotics Anonymous started right here in San Fernando and is all the way in Israel and bringing people here. And it just kind of touched my heart. So, you can't hear me. Well, where's the damn microphone at? Okay, so the topic, I guess, is when at the end of the road. So I'll tell you a little bit. Can you hear me in the back yet? About the end of my road. You know, I came from the East LA area. I was raised over here in East LA area, Montebello to be specific. And I had some good people, good parents, good family, all that. I had some trauma happen to me as a child. And when I was about 12 years old, I started sniffing paint. So I started out sniffing paint, went to pills, weed, and by the time I was almost 16, I was had a needle on my arm. So my progression was really quick, you know, and my end of the road started coming pretty fast, you know. So when that happened, you know, what happened was my brother went to Vietnam, right? And when he came back, we were all using together, and He said, it's all good, Rose, it's all good, as long as you don't stick a needle in your arm, as long as you don't use heroin. And he might as well, when he said that, it was like a big green light for me. He might as well have taken me to score himself, because it was like, if you said I couldn't have it, don't do it, I needed to know why. You know, so there I was, you know, 16 years old, strung out, and I didn't know I was strung out. I was using, and I'd never actually stopped. You know, I was young, the money was there, the drugs were there, the party was going. And so I never really tried to stop at that point, you know. And what happened for me was when I was about 16, my parents found out that I was, that I had, you know, marks. So a series of things happened, and my brother is a surfer. I'm 67, he's 75, and he's still on the water. But he was a surfer. When he turned 18, he went to Hawaii, and he never came back. So when I was 16 and my parents saw the marks on my arm, they shipped me off to Hawaii to go live with my brother, right? And when I got over there, it was like going from the pan to the fire. I mean, Hawaii is all drugs, right? And my brother was the connection. And he had like an acre of shit he was growing. He was dealing coke. And so here I am now, 16, 17 years old. I had never shot coke before. Here I was on this beautiful island. And a beautiful, at the river mouth, Anahola River mouth, and I first took my first skis of coke right there on that island. And it was really off and running, right? And so I was just a mess. I was a teenage mess. When I was almost like 19 when I came back, and I hit the ground running. I'm not sure what happened exactly, but I think it was in 1980. I'm not sure how it happened, but I wound up in a treatment facility. I don't remember getting picked up. I don't remember being driven there. I don't remember if they got me from the county jail. I don't know how it happened. I just, all of a sudden, I'm in this treatment facility, and I don't remember how I got there. I still don't. And because I was messed up, you know. And so I show up in this treatment facility, and I think at that time I'm about 20, almost 22, and I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That was not the end of the road for me. I'm just giving you a little bit of how I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. So it was 1980, towards the end of 1980, and my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous was at the Mata Villa Project's rec room in East L.A., and it was before East L.A. was an area. Wake up, Vicky. And so the sponsor shows up and she sleeps, okay? The sponsee. And the very first meeting that I went to was right there in the projects. And I remember the first person I ever heard share. His name was Louis Diaz. He's passed now. And I listened to what they said. You know what I mean? I was like 22, maybe 22-ish, you know. And I was cute. You know, everything was in the right place. My face wasn't, you know, it was all right. You know, I was okay. And so I walked into this fucking meeting, right? The only women there, I think, came in the van that we were in. And the meeting was like maybe only these people right here, maybe like 10 people. And there was like these old inmate guys, right? Done a million years in the pen. And, you know, they were limping in and their teeth were missing and they had old abscess scars everywhere and sagging tattoos, a couple of teeth missing and shit. And I was like, well, fuck, I know why they're clean. You know what I mean? They're at the end of the road, you know? But at that point, I wasn't, you know? And but even though I wasn't at the end of my road, I did recognize my people. And I didn't have a problem recognizing. I didn't have blinders on. It was like I used to score from those old guys. You know, I used to go to the corner and score from those old guys. So I recognized them as my people. And so I kept on going to the meetings through the program. You know, they were taking us and bringing us, and I would see my people there, and I saw Louis. And when maybe he was yelling, but when I was new like that, I thought that everybody was yelling. I feel like I'm yelling right now, but he was talking. I felt like he was really loud, and but he got the point across, you know. So now I'm going back and forth to this program, and like I said, I was a teenage drug addict, right? And so I never had an apartment. I was never in a relationship. It was, you know, using was my whole thing up until that point, right? And so I'm in this treatment place. I don't know if anybody's ever been in one, but they wanted us to make our bed, turn the lights off, show up at a group on a certain time, you know, take a shower, you know what I mean? Yeah, see, they heard my story. The front row right here knows me. And so so they wanted us to take a shower every day, right? And sign the shower paper that we took a shower, right? So you had to take a shower and then sign the paper. And so I was having issues with that, because I don't know about you, but when I was using, you know, I wasn't getting up in the morning and showering and foo-foo and all that to go score. You know, that happened later, you know, when I was at a certain level of loaded, you know. So here I am in this treatment place, and they used to, I was in constant trouble. I couldn't make my bed. I couldn't remember to turn the light off. I couldn't even get it together to take a shower. So I was like, ugh. You know, they would wake us up extra hours early and make us scrub a toilet or write standards or do some stupid shit in that program, right? And so I was like, well, I'm not going to get up tomorrow. I'm going to take a shower. So for me, you know, and I had all my sexuality issues, you know. It was like, it didn't matter the gender. You know, if we could hit that spot, we're hitting it. You know what I mean? And so so for me to sign the shower list every day, I started inviting people to my shower, right? I found the handicap shower, it was bigger. had a little bench in there. She's like, come on, you know. And so I was inviting people to my shower so I could take a shower every day. And I was signing the shower list. I'm in compliance, right? So I thought I was doing really good, but they wound up kicking me out. And I was mad about it because in my mind, I was in compliance. I was signing the list. I was doing the best I can, and they kicked me out. So during that time, they did take me to meetings every day. Well, they took the whole band to meetings, and I did hear what Narcotics Anonymous was about. I did recognize my people. I heard a lot of stuff in there, and I heard that it's a disease that gets worse, never better. I heard jails, institutions, and death. I heard it's a family disease. I'm not the only one that's got it. I'm not the only one. I'm going to give it away as freely as my disease was given to me. I'm going to give it, right, to my family. So I got kicked out of that treatment facility, and I had some state time hanging on me. So they promptly gaffled me up and took me to prison. So I show up at prison. I'm still like 22-ish, still cute as a button, right? I roll into fucking prison. I don't have no issues there. You know what I mean? It was okay there, except for I didn't know how to live, right? I didn't know how to live, and I had never taken care of myself. And you know, Emmy, like I told her the story what happened, because when I was in the prison, right, all these women in the prison with me, and I don't know if they came through juvenile hall or where they came from, but they know how to wash clothes. So, you know, I would see them have a bucket with bleach, and they would bleach their whites. I would hear the girls say, oh, I'm going to bleach my whites. And I would see the bucket, and I would see them put their whites in there. So me being the addict that I am, I don't ask questions. I just say, okay, I'm going to bleach my whites, right? So I get a bucket, and I put straight bleach in there.
Oh, my God.
And I put my white slingshots, and I had some white tennis shoes and a couple white T-shirts, and I put them in the bucket with the straight bleach, and I leave them there, you know, 5-6 hours. You know what I mean? Because I don't know how to ask fucking questions, right? So I go to take my shit out of the bucket, and it's just nothing. It's disintegrated, right? And that's the way I roll in, right? I don't know how to do anything. I don't know how to live. I barely knew how to take a shower, and that was only with company. You know what I mean? So that's just where I was at. You know, I just didn't have it together. So now I'm in this prison, and I'm destroyed my clothes, you know, and I'm too much of a doping to ask. You know, I just kind of watched, and I'm still scared of bleach. I'll tell you the truth, I don't wear, you know, somebody's gonna do my whites, I'm not. And so there I am in this prison, right, and I wasn't really having a hard time. But during that last, before I went to prison, right before I wound up in that treatment place, I had, it's a longer story, but I had started using with this man. He was like 18 years older than me, and he had the dope, and we were hustling together and shit. And like, I didn't want him to leave the room, so I had to have sex with this guy, right? So I wound up having a baby. So I had a son, and he was born strung out. I was a kind of, because it wasn't anything, I never dreamed of having children. I never wanted that life. And when I was pregnant, I was strung out on heroin, and I used to fix, and the baby wouldn't move, and I was like, oh, I better slow down, you know? And then I would feel a little kick or a flutter. I was like, okay, you know. So he was born, strung out, 1979. He was born addicted, and in them days, they didn't keep the kids. They sent him home with me, man. Man, they probably shouldn't have, you know. But so here I am now in this prison, and my parents have my son in Arizona, and I'm in the prison, cute as a button, having a ball, you know. It was fun. And then the mail came, and this lady who was, I think at the time, maybe like 45-ish, and she was like, "Hey, Rose, you know, I got some mail today. I got some pictures in the mail. You want to check out my pictures? They're my boys." And I'm like, "Yeah, let me see, you know." So she shows me her pictures, and she's like, "Oh, this is my son, you know, Chewy. He's in Folsom. And this is my son, Angel, and he's in Quinton. And I can't wait till we're out together. You know, we bang, we use, you know, we crime, and we're all getting out soon." And she was just so happy to be talking about her boys and all the using and criming and banging that we're going to do together. You know, and for a split second, I thought, man, if I don't do something about my life, I'm going to be like an old dyke on the yard sharing stories about me and my son, right? And I thought, when I get out of here, I'm going to go to those NA meetings. That's what my thought was, right? So I do my time and I do all that, and I get out. And as much as I would like to say it was the end of my road, it wasn't the end of my road. You know, I got out. I had those thoughts of getting clean when I was busted, and it wasn't the end of my road yet. So I got out, and you know, it was a mess. My life was a mess, and I was using, and my parents had my son in Arizona, and my parents had a little gambling habit, you know, so they were going to Vegas. And they dropped the kid off at the house, right? My sister lived in the front. And when I got released, they didn't let me in the house, but she let me stay in the garage. In the garage with the lawnmower and the washing machine and motorcycle parts. And it was a mess, right? And a fresh litter of kittens. And it was fucking disgusting, right? And it was like, she gave me a bed, and she got me a little metal jail locker, and I was in the garage. And it was not a converted garage. It was an old neighborhood garage with a sliding slat door, wooden, with probably a third of the slats missing. It was winter. I only know that because it was football season. And the wind used to whip through there. And who could stay clean in those conditions? Not me, you know what I mean? So here I am using in the garage and doing whatever I had to do to get more, you know? And my parents went to Vegas, dropped the kid off, and this kid that I could probably say I counted, only seeing him, I could probably count on my hands how many times I had seen him, right? And I was there, and he wanted to look at me, sit next to me. He was following me to the garage. I come stumbling down the driveway, and he come bumping, you know, like that towards me. And I was like, "Oh, what's going on here? What's going on? This kid is like, it was nothing that I wanted." And so they picked him up, and they called back week later or whatever, and they said, "You know, your son wants to be with you. We're taking him to you." So, you know, a lot of reverse here. A lot of people get their kids taken, and they don't get them back till they get clean. Well, I gave mine to him, my parents, and they gave him back when I was strung out. They were like, "This is your kid. You need to take him." So now they cleared out the back house. They put me in the back house. They gave me this kid. They gave me a car. They put the lights on and, you know, all that bullshit, right? So now I'm there in this back house with this kid, you know, and I'm strung out. And I don't know how to live. I still have no clue how to live. I came from the garage, you know, and so I'm in this back house, and it wasn't a nice house. It didn't have drywall. It was like it had really thin walls, like cardboard, like a thick cardboard, and it had metal slats where they would meet, you know, and that's where I was at in there, and I was using, and I was like, fuck, I gotta do something. I'm gonna try going to those NA meetings, right? So I went to the NA meetings. I called my sister's friend had given me her phone number, and she said, when you're ready, call me. And that number I had. So I called the number, and she came and she took me to some meetings. And I like to tell you that was the end of my road, but it really wasn't the end yet. I went to the meetings. She picked me up. I heard what they said, and I got a few days together, and, you know, as soon as I got clean and started feeling a little better, I started looking around. You know, my little beeper goes up. Oh, look at her, you know. And so, you know, 30 days in, I hook up. I bring this woman to the house. She has 6 months. I have 30 days. And, you know, she really needed a place to live to bring her son. So now she brought her son. So the two kids and me and her. And we tried to stay clean. We stayed clean for 6 months. Still not the end of the road. And so some shit happened. And her daughter had some issues. And she was in the hospital. And they had put a shunt in her head. And she was in a coma. And I had 6 months. And she had a year. And we had stopped going to meetings. And we were just there at the hospital. And I told her, you know what? I got to go. I'm going to go fix this one time. And she was like, I'm going to go with you, you know. And we went together, and we were gone for 2 years. You know, what turned into one time turned into one time every hour if I could muster it, you know. And during that time, before that, when I was there by myself and I was trying to get to those meetings, I was scared of my car, right? I didn't know how my car had a mind of its own, because my dad gave me the house, the car, the lights, the kit, right? So I was trying to go to these meetings, but I would get in the car and I would start it and it would take me to score. And it would take me to make money. It would take me because you were going to score, you know. The car had complete control. I had none. So when I rolled in at Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't have a clue of how to be honest and say, I'm scared of my car, I started lying, right? I started lying. And can you pick me up? Don't you have a car? Well, no gas, bad tires, brakes, everything you could think of was wrong with my car. So I was lying and lying and lying, and people were picking me up, or they would say, just get to the meeting, we'll drive you home. So I had been in that house by myself using dope, and it was, like I said, like a shack. And so this one guy, his name was Albert, and back in the 80s, those old dudes used to wear those sunglasses, or I don't know if they were sunglasses, but they were tinted green. So he was an older dude with a belly and green glasses, and he would say, okay, I'll pick you up. So this dude started picking me up and dropping me off from meetings, right? And so one day, he says, can I use your restroom? And I said, yeah, sure, come in. So he comes in, and you know, it was a doping pad. So he goes into the bathroom, and he comes out. And he's like, Rose, he goes, you don't have a shower curtain. And I'm like, yeah, and? You know, like, what, I need a shower curtain? And he was like, you need a shower curtain, because those little thin paper walls were all warped up. You know, I had spent a lot of time in that bathroom, it was just a fucking disaster in there. And he was like, you need a shower curtain. And I'm like, well, where do you get one? You know? And he was like, you got to remember, this was like way back early 80s. And he says, well, get like $10 and go down to Kmart, and that's where they have the shower curtains. So I was like, okay, thank you, you know. And so, and he's continuing to pick me up. So then he's asking me, he asked me, did you get the shower curtain? And I lied. And I said, yes, I got it. Thank you so much. I don't know how I was living without a shower curtain, right? So then I'm lying to the guy. I'm feeling a little guilty. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get one. So I get my $10, and I put on my Levi's, and I put on a little, I probably look like a gas station attendant. My hair is pretty much like it is now. I was cute, you know, it was back in the day. And so I go down to fucking Kmart, and I walk in there, and I get to the shower curtain section, and there's shower curtains, shower liners, there's clear ones, color ones, striped ones, they had flower ones, they had metal hooks, wooden hooks, plastic hooks, oval hooks, square hooks, they had doodads for the hooks. They had so much shit for a shower curtain, right? And I'm standing there, this hard bitch off the yard, like, I'm not gonna cry, you know? And I'm like, so I start, you know, sliding out of the area. I'm holding the tears. I'm like, fuck that guy. Fuck that shower curtain. Fuck N.A. I don't need a fucking shower curtain. You know what I mean? But, you know, that's my level of being able to take care of myself. So now I've already lied to the dude. I've already went down there and gave him my best shot. Couldn't handle it. And this guy's still picking me up. And he, what happens? He has to use a restroom again. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. He's coming to check on my shower curtain. And I'm like, oh. Right? And that house was like a little, had little steps. So he went in, and when he came out, I'm standing there like this. I'm like, and he's like, what happened? I'm like, he's like, you couldn't do it? And I'm like, no, you know, I couldn't do it. So he got me, and he took me down to Kmart, and he bought the shower curtain, and he bought the things, and he came to my house, and he hung it up. You know, and I got to tell you, that's the way Narcotics Anonymous has been for me for the last 39 years. There's always been someone here to show me how to live, all the way from how to wash my white clothes to how to get a fucking shower curtain. I'm an expert shopper now. But, you know, there's always been someone here in Narcotics Anonymous to show me how to live. I didn't know I had a living problem. But at that point, I still wasn't at the end of my road. But ever since then, I knew that Narcotics Anonymous had people that were going to show me how to live. And, you know, in return, I've helped a lot of people too. I took a newcomer. She's fresh out of prison. I took a newcomer prisoner, and I was like, oh, you want ice cream? Because I'm a tubby. I wanted ice cream. So I took her to Cold Stone, and this girl practically hyperventilated in there. She had it went straight anxiety attack, could not figure out ice cream. You know what I mean? And that's okay. We don't know how to live. We don't know. It's okay. There's always somebody here in Narcotics Anonymous to show us how to live. My job is to stay abstinent. My job is to not pick up. And there's always somebody here to show me how to live. And so, still not the end of the road. I knew the people were here. and then I went and hooked up with the 30 days. And after, you know, some time had passed. And we were out there for 2 years. And so in July of 1986, my mother's birthday was July 24th. My sister's is July 29th. My nephew was July 27th. All these birthdays in July. So my parents were going to Mexico to celebrate July birthdays. And they wanted me to go. I was like, I can't go. I can't leave the block. I'm strung out, right? And I hardly had any clothes or anything because all my money went to using. And so they said, well, how much money do you need to get enough heroin to, so you could go to Mexico? Right? So, and they bought me some funky clothes to wear. And they gave me some money. And I went and I picked up what I thought was supposed to be last me a week. You know, maybe 3 days, you know. So now I'm in Mexico, a whole other fucking country, and with my family, come on, and I run out of dope, right? And so they're trying to, I don't know if that was planned or what happened, but they tried to get me clean. And, you know, I had a huge resentment towards my mother. My mother, we used to go to my grandma's house on Sunday. And my mother's brother was a Down syndrome man. He was a full-grown Down syndrome man, strong, man build. But he wasn't verbal or nothing. Like, you couldn't, you know. And we would go over there on Sundays, and she would tell me, go play with your Uncle David. And my Uncle David would take me to the cellar and sexually play with me, right? So I had this huge, it went on for, the resentment that I had was so deep, and it was so painful, and I could not stand my mother. So here I am in Mexico without the buffer of dope, and my mother's there. And my first day, I unleashed that on my mother. You know, and I let all that shit go. And I don't know, you know, this comes up every once in a while when I share, when I have more than 10 minutes. And I don't know, but for me, I think it was very important to let that secret go. Even though it was not pretty, it wasn't planned, it was not part of a step work. It was just something that my spirit and my soul needed that minute. And I've been clean ever since. And that was July 21st, 1986. You know, so I came back, and the woman that I had was living with, she stopped using the day I left. Because I was a total asshole. I'm not going to tell the asshole story. But but she had been turning tricks and making money and shit. And I was like refusing to do very much because I didn't want to go back to prison. So when I left, she stopped. And I was over there. And so I stopped over there. And when I came back, I'm telling her, get back to work, right? No. And so she has 1 week clean longer than me. We both stay clean from that period of time. And so I came back and I went, started going to the meetings because I knew that my people were here, right? And it took me, so that was the end of my road, you know, of using. And now those using roads lead to a lot of other roads that I've had to come to the end of, but I am down to 20 minutes. So, I came back and dived into the program. Started just hitting it. And back then in 86, there wasn't as many meetings. It was a whole different world back then in 86. And I used to go to a 6:30 meeting, a noon meeting, a 4 o'clock meeting. I had to hit the other fellowship for those daytime meetings. And then I would go to the NA meeting in the evening. And because I'm the kind of dope fiend that doesn't wait till 7 o'clock to use. I couldn't wait till 7 o'clock to get to a meeting. I had to hit meetings the second I rolled out of bed. And that's how it happened for me. So, you know, thank God there was those people that were showing me how to live. And I started attending meetings. And I started being attracted to the program. And I didn't know how or why, when I would go to a meeting in a room with all these old dudes in it and a couple old broads in there. By that time, I'm like 27. I mean, I was 27 when I got clean. So, and I would feel, when I was new, I would feel like a little sweaty. My stomach would be a little twisted. I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin. I was abstinent. I wasn't recovered. I was abstinent. I was showing up, and I felt really uncomfortable when I showed up. And I didn't understand how, after sitting in a room with drug addicts, I don't know, who are recovering, after an hour, hour and a half, I would feel better, physically better. Maybe the headache went away a little bit. My stomach wasn't as twisted. That little clamminess was better, you know, and I didn't understand what it was. But it was attracting me because I needed comfort. I still come to Narcotics Anonymous for comfort. You know, I turned to drugs for comfort. I thought drugs were comforting me, comforting my spirit, my broken spirit. And that's where I turned. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I started feeling that comfort. So it was attracting me back. And it took me a few years here to realize that it's the higher power that we have here in Narcotics Anonymous that's working through the people, working through you. There's a higher power in this room right here, right now. It's not by accident that we're here in this room together. There is no way. It's the way it is. Our higher power has us here. And there was, I was coming up on 2 years, and I didn't have an understanding of a higher power or a God. I was not raised religious or anything like that. So I didn't have that to block me. But I didn't have any direction on that. And I knew that I needed to find a higher power. And there was a man at that time, his name was Pepe. And he was such a loving man. And you could just feel you could feel it pouring out of him. You could feel the peace. You could feel the serenity pouring out of this guy. So I was attracted to that feeling with him. And I started hanging around and hanging around. I started going. My best friend was this guy named Rudy that he sponsored. So me and Rudy were there every day. He had his wife there, Jeanette, his sons Tony and Eric. And we were all there together every day. And I was just soaking it in. And I asked him, you know, like, I was talking to him about God, and he was like, Rose, you know, I have a God who's only capable of doing one thing, and that's loving me. And he said, you could use my God. You could use my God. You can claim my God as your God and know that the only thing your God, my God, is capable of is loving me, right? And so I took that on, and he told me about the newcomer, and it made me understand what I was feeling in the meetings and why I kept coming back. Was he was saying, and thank God for you. Thank God for there's people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous who are practicing spiritual principles in their life, who are doing the work and practicing spiritual principles. Because what he said was that when the newcomer shows up, the newcomer feels like a piece of shit, right? That has been had all kinds of reinforcement from family, friends, probation, whoever. We have a lot of reinforcement telling us all the bad things about us. We have all our spiritual trauma that's happened. And we show up here and our spirit is pressed down. It's depressed. It's asleep. We put it to sleep, he said. And he said, as we practice spiritual principles in our life, we have to look past that. We have to treat the newcomer with the spiritual principles that are given to us in Narcotics Anonymous. We need to be patient. We need to be patient. We need to be tolerant. We need to be accepting. We need to be understanding. We need to be compassionate. We need to be empathetic. We need to practice our spiritual principles on the newcomer. Look past what they already know about themselves. They already know. And he said, so that their spirit can awaken. You know, and that's the part of the 12 step. We have a spiritual awakening. And as we have our spiritual awakening, we practice these spiritual principles on people, and they can awaken. So, you know, the way I understand is that let you love me until I can love me, until I can be patient with myself, until I can be tolerant of myself when I make mistakes, when I can treat myself with respect. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that was a great teaching that he gave me, and I adopted that God, and I've had that God in my life for the last 39 years. You know, I've experienced a lot of stuff since I grew up here. Most of my mess happened in Narcotics Anonymous. I've done a lot of messy things here because I never had a relationship. I never had that experience. I didn't blow it all up. I never had it, so I had to blow it up here. I blew it all up right here in NA. You know what I mean? But the one thing is, I never let go of my abstinence, and I never let go of my belief in my God being capable of only loving me. And the people of Narcotics Anonymous, the spirit of the higher power has always worked here. You know, so if you're new, they gave me the 5 minute. So I'm going to tell you one last story, because I got a million stories to tell you. I got so many. But I had a couple years clean. I'm on fire for Narcotics Anonymous right now as we speak. I have 39 years clean. I have a home group. I have a home group on the streets. I go into the prison every Wednesday. I have a home group inside CIW. I go in there every Wednesday and have a meeting in the prison. And this last week, there was a new person who showed up at the meeting. I can't get her off my mind and my heart. She showed up there because in our meeting, we go around the room and we claim our clean time. And when she claimed her clean time, she said she had 2 weeks. And then later on, when the sharing came on, when we were taking people were sharing, she shared, and she broke down and she cried. And she said that she's tired of using, and it's so hard every day not to use. She said, I've been here over 2 decades, and I can't stop using. And I don't want to get released from here strung out. And she was crying, and my heart is overwhelmed with her right now. I've been thinking about her every day, and you know, of course, you know, we talked and we shared, and you know, we gave her what we could, you know, and hopefully she comes back this coming Wednesday. But the disease is real, and it's here, it's in there. It doesn't matter where we're at. What I came to believe is that Narcotics Anonymous works. We're a fellowship of people who believe in the same thing, right? And I've gone beyond believing. I know that if we practice this program, we can recover from this disease. We can. And so that's what keeps me going every week in there. And so, I have a home group out here. I have a home group in a prison. I have sponsees. I have a sponsor. I do all kinds of shit all the time. Not once in a while. All the fucking time. Am I lying? No, I'm not lying. And then I meet a newcomer, and they say, oh, we can't get to a meeting because we're here or there. Oh, well, log into the 6:30 virtual meeting. I said, if you log in tomorrow, hit me up. I'll join too. So all of a sudden, I'm doing 6:30 meeting because all of a sudden, they're following direction. Oh, shit, now I'm in a meeting. Now I'm in a meeting at 6:30. And then I'm answering sponsee calls all day. And then I have my commitment in the evening. And then I have my deadline to have my writing done. So, you know, it's like, that's how it works. And because I am not willing to think that using is not an option. Using is always a fucking option. I don't give a fuck. Using is always an option. And I know that there's a rack for me in the prison.
Right.
That's for sure. Yeah. And I could go on and on. But, you know, what happened when I had a few years clean? I was on fire for Narcotics Anonymous, just like I am right now. I was scraping up people. Oh, don't you want to feel like me? I'll pick you up. I'll take you to a meeting. Oh, where, you know, what time, where, what, you know? So I scraped up this girl. And I was like, she was like in her probably close to 50. She had been living in her car. She looked like shit. She was dirty. And I was like, don't you want to be clean? You know, kind of, you know. And so she probably wanted a shower and some food. So I brought her home, showered her up, fed her, put some clothes on her. And I was like, you know what? You need a job. So I called somebody. Oh, yeah, I got this newcomer. You know, needs a job. And so they, okay, bring her. But she's going to need these shoes. So I got her the shoes. I put her the clothes. I hooked her up the job. I made her a fucking sack lunch. You know, I dropped her off on the first day. I gave her money to come back on the bus. Right? I dropped her off. She never went in. She never went in to the fucking job. I never heard from her again. She never came back. Those shoes are gone, you know? So I'm pissed off. I'm so pissed off. I'm hurt. So I go to the predecessor. What's going on here? Why don't they want to be clean? I gave her the shoes. I packed her a lunch. I got her a job. She had the clothes. And she's like, Rose, do you know who Paul Revere is? And I'm like, yeah. And she said, well, what did Paul Revere do? I said, Paul Revere came through town on a horse. And he said, the British are coming, the British are coming. And she said, no, what did Paul Revere do? And I looked at her crazy. I said, he came through town on a horse. And he said, the British are coming, the British are coming. And she said, no, Paul Revere came through town. He didn't even fucking slow down. He was hauling ass on the horse. And he was yelling out. He was carrying a message. The British are coming. The British are coming. They're coming to kill you. To take your ass out. He didn't slow down. He didn't say, I'll be back at 5. I got shoes for you. I got food for you. I got a job for you. Don't worry about where you're going to sleep. He didn't say none of that. He didn't say none of that. He barely slowed down. The British are coming. The British are coming. And he rode off into safety. And, you know, and that's what I'm doing here right now in Narcotics Anonymous at this meeting. I'm trying to carry the message. I'm coming through on a horse. This disease that we have is trying to kill us. Jails, institutions, and death kill our spirit. I can't do it for you as much as I would love to, but I'm going to ride off into the safety of meetings, sponsorship, service, step work, spiritual principles. You can follow me. My name is Rose, but you can call me Paul if you want. You know what I mean? Just, I'm down. I mean, follow me. Thank you for letting me share. Yeah.